is on, night is warm, cops are gone, rocket bike is all her own, it's called a hurricane. She told me once it's quite a ride, it's shaped so there's this place inside where if you're moving, you can hide safe within the rain. She wants to run away, but there's nowhere that she can go, nowhere the pain won't come again. But she can hide, hide in the pouring rain. And she rides the eye of the hurricane. Tell the truth, explain to me how you got this need for speed. She laughed and said it might just be the next best thing to love. Hope is gone, and she confessed that when you lay your dream to rest, you can get what's second best, but it's hard to get enough. She wants to run away, there's nowhere that she can go, nowhere the pain won't come again. But she can hide, hide in the pouring rain. She rides the eye of the hurricane. We saw her ride so fast last night, racing by in a flash of light, riding quick, the street was dark, the shining truck she thought was parked had blocked her path, stopped her heart, not the hurricane. She saw her chance to slip the trap, there's just the room to pass and back, but then it moved, closed the gap. She never felt the pain. She wants to run away, but there's nowhere that she can go, nowhere the pain won't come again. But she can hide, hide in the pouring rain. She rides the eye of the hurricane. She rides the eye of the hurricane.
The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
Without freedom of the press, no democratic form of government could exist.
We switch you now to London.
I'm standing on a rooftop looking out over London.
Good night and good luck.
Good evening from our CBS newsroom in New York.
NBC presents Chet Huntley and David Brinkley.
From ABC, this is World News Tonight. With Peter Jennings in London, Max Robinson in Chicago, and from our desk in Washington, Frank Reynolds.
Good evening.
This historic legislation, the telecommunications law, will create many, many high-wage jobs, will create opportunity and better lives for all Americans.
When the press is free, the people of a country are free. When the press is not free, the people of a country are in danger of slavery.
Keeping you informed with information, news, and the views of people making the news. It's the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Well, we made it to a Friday, and what a Friday it is. Oh, boy. So I was just watching a little bit of the daily White House briefing. They started with Venezuela. You know, there's a now Category 3 hurricane bearing down on Texas and Louisiana. They started with Venezuela, so be it. It was Mnuchin and McMaster who were taking questions, and then they turned things over to a guy from Homeland Security whose name is Bossert, who actually seemed pretty good for a while. And then I had to turn the TV off and come back in the studio to get ready for the show. And apparently after I left, after I stopped watching, this Bossert guy said the storm is, quote, right up President Trump's alley. And then he said, Trump is focused on making America great again. Doesn't that make you feel better? And then he said the president is concerned with people who voted for him and didn't vote for him in the path of the storm. Yes, Jared Rizzi of, I think, The New Yorker tweeted this out. Odd to say it like that. It's very odd to say it like that. This guy wants everything to be a division. Why not just say concerned with everybody in the path of the storm? So this is, you know, it's already a Category 3. It's still not projected to hit near Corpus Christi until sometime late tonight. And it reminds me, it's how surreal watching this update, because 25 years ago, Hurricane Andrew hit South Florida. And at the time, I was living in Los Angeles, but I happened to be here visiting my dad. My father had a few months earlier had an accident. He was actually pushed, long story, and he was left quadriplegic. So at that time, I had a big job in LA, and I was flying in every few weeks. I'd take a long weekend, and I'd come in and visit my dad. And I had just so happened to, you know, have that weekend scheduled to come in. And there was a storm out in the Atlantic, and it was looking a bit threatening. And sure enough, I guess it was on Saturday, we realized this thing was really going to happen. And it hit us, if I remember correctly, I believe it was Sunday night. And all the power went out. My father, again, was quadriplegic, and he had just been home from the hospital a short time. We didn't have a van yet. I had no way to move him. The nurse, you know, we had round-the-clock nursing care for him, and the nurse decided that she wanted to be home with her family. So I was there alone with my father as a Category 5 hurricane was coming. And the power went out, and, you know, we had a little battery-operated TV. Remember, like a Walkman television, which is a good thing because, you know, there was no cable then. There was no internet then. If there was, you know, in 92, it wasn't widespread. We certainly didn't have it. And so I remember watching all night, pretty much all night, the radar. And it was, we lived right on the Dade-Broward County line. And, you know, the storm, it was like coming straight at us. And I'm thinking, this is it. You know, I guess, well, if I got to go, I guess we'll go in the storm. I'll be here with my dad. And then all of a sudden, at the last minute, it veered south and it hit Homestead head on. And I mean, we still got hit with a hell of a storm. I remember throughout the night, you know, we had good storm shutters on the house, thankfully. And so all the windows were boarded up, and hearing things hitting the house from all angles. I felt like there was an alien invasion or something, and they were hitting us from every direction. It was really, really frightening. And the next morning, well, at the time, I worked on a big morning radio show called The Mark and Brian Show, who were on the air in Los Angeles. They were syndicated around the country. And so they called me to see how I did. I guess our phone worked. And the power must have come back on, too, because I had a cordless phone. And I don't think I had a cell phone at that time. Maybe I did have a cell phone then. I don't know. My memory is it's 25 years ago. But I remember walking out the front door for the first time, seeing we lived on a cul-de-sac, and the big tree in the middle of the cul-de-sac, the tree was still standing, but most of the branches were down. There were branches on cars. There was debris everywhere. I mean, it was a mess. And so while I was on the air with them on the phone, I walked outside to see what was happening. You know, it's a scary time because although this guy from the Department of Homeland Security, Bossert, said they're very prepared and everything, and he sounded like he knew what he was talking about. You know, there is no director of Homeland Security because that was the new chief of staff was the director of Homeland Security. So there's nobody in that office now, right? There's no head of NOAA. There's no, let's see. So John Kelly is now the White House chief of staff. There's no head of NOAA. And I don't know. They're missing a number of other people. There is finally a director of FEMA. They just got somebody in place like a month ago. So I don't know. I'm feeling a little nervous about it. You'll hear when we play What's News in a little while. At the time I recorded this morning, the president hadn't tweeted out anything about Texas. Now, of course, he is concerned with people who voted for him and didn't vote for him in the path of the storm. So that's good to know. I just hope everyone stays safe. You never know with these things. And what they're saying about the path of this storm is it's a very slow moving storm. It's going to be a big rain event, which means a lot of flooding. And it's going to come ashore, and then it's going to sort of ride the shoreline. It may go back out into the water and then hit, make landfall again. So this is unpredictable. And the thing is, usually with a hurricane like that, it'll pass in a day or two. You're out of the clear because it's moved on and it's dissipated. This one, because it's going to ride the shoreline, is going to be around for a number of days with a lot of rain being dumped on that area. So if you're coastal Texas, Louisiana, northern Mexico, of course we don't talk about Mexico unless it's a wall. Stay safe. What a week, right? What a week this has been. This was the week. Just think back. On Monday, it was the Afghanistan speech, right? On Tuesday, it was Trump's insane rally in Phoenix. And Wednesday, he spoke before the American Legion and tried to walk it back again because he read from the teleprompter. And it reminded me of something I put together not long after Trump took office. You know, listening to him, I realized how much of an autocracy he's trying to bring us into. He's a megalomaniac, first of all, consumed with power. And his speech on Tuesday night was truly frightening. After a frightening last week, when he went off doing his both-siderism thing. So you might remember back when I first started doing What's News, they took on a different form. They were a lot more light and funny. I'm finding, I have a hard time finding the humor in the news these days. So these days, What's News is pretty much straight news. But back then, when I saw these vestiges of fascism creeping through everything Trump said, it reminded me of that article that we've all read, The 14 Characteristics of Fascism. This was an article written by a guy named Lawrence Britt back in 2003. And I know that he may have been discredited. He wasn't a doctor. I don't know what his story is. But the fact of the matter is the article still holds true. The 14 characteristics of fascism, he points out, really are signs of fascism. And when you go through it, it's undeniable that this is the direction that Donald Trump is trying to take us. So I thought what we'd do, we've got Driftglass coming up in the second half hour of the show today. It's been a while since we've spoken with Driftglass, but I thought we'd go back and listen to the piece I put together with those 14 characteristics of fascism, just so you keep it top of mind and know what we're fighting against. I gave it the early What's News treatment. It's on the Nicole Sandler Show, NicoleSandler.com, and the Progressive Voices.
One, powerful and continuing nationalism. Fascist regimes tend to make constant use of patriotic mottos, slogans, symbols, songs, and other paraphernalia. Flags are seen everywhere, as are flag symbols on clothing and in public displays.
From this day forward, a new vision will govern our land. From this day forward, it's going to be only America first. America first.
Number two, disdain for the recognition of human rights.
Equal rights.
Because of fear of enemies and the need for security, the people in fascist regimes are persuaded that human rights can be ignored in certain cases because of need. The people tend to look the other way or even approve of torture, summary executions, assassinations, long incarcerations of prisoners,
etc.
Mr. President, you told me during one of the debates that you would bring back waterboarding and a hell of a lot worse.
I want to keep our country safe. I want to keep our country safe.
What does that mean?
When they're shooting, when they're chopping off the heads of our people and other people, when they're chopping off the heads of people because they happen to be a Christian in the Middle East, when ISIS is doing things that nobody has ever heard of since medieval times, would I feel strongly about waterboarding? As far as I'm concerned, we have to fight fire with fire. I have spoken as recently as 24 hours ago with people at the highest level of intelligence, and I asked them the question, does torture work? And the answer was yes, absolutely.
Number three, identification of enemies and scapegoats as a unifying cause.
Short people got no reason to live. They got little hands, little eyes. They walk around telling great big lies.
The people are rallied into a unifying patriotic frenzy over the need to eliminate a perceived common threat or foe.
Lock her up. That's right.
Racial, ethnic, or religious minorities, liberals, communists, socialists, terrorists. You got the idea?
Donald J. Trump is calling for a total and complete shutdown of Muslims entering the United States.
Number four, supremacy of the military. Even when there are widespread domestic problems, the military is given a disproportionate amount of government funding, and the domestic agenda is neglected. Soldiers and military service are glamorized.
We're going to build up our great military. We're going to build it up. We're going to strengthen our borders. We're going to do things that haven't been done for our country for many, many decades. It's going to change. I promise you, it's going to change.
Number five, rampant sexism.
I'll admit it.
Whoa.
I did try and fuck her. She was married.
That's huge news there.
I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there, and she was married. And all of a sudden, I see her. She's now got the big phony tits and everything. I've got to use some Tic Tacs just in case I start kissing her. You know, I'm automatically attracted to beautiful. I just start kissing them. It's like a magnet. I don't even wait. And when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything.
Whatever you want.
Grab them by the pussy. I could do anything.
I say, let us put man and a woman together to find out which one is smarter. Some say men, but I say no.
The governments of fascist nations tend to be almost exclusively male-dominated. Under fascist regimes, traditional gender roles are made more rigid. Divorce, abortion, and homosexuality are suppressed, and the state is represented as the ultimate guardian of the family institution.
That's right, the woman is smarter. That's right, the woman is smarter. That's right, the woman is That's right.
Number six, controlled mass media.
Well, I got nothing against the press. They wouldn't print it if it wasn't true.
As you know, I have a running war with the media. They are among the most dishonest human beings on earth. I get up this morning, I turn on one of the networks, and they show an empty field. I said, wait a minute, I made a speech. I looked out. The field was, it looked like a million and a half people. They showed a field where there were practically nobody standing there.
Sometimes the media is directly controlled by the government, but in other cases, the media is indirectly controlled by government regulation or sympathetic media spokespeople and executives. Censorship.
A reminder that the president's top aide just told the New York Times that the press should keep its mouth shut. No.
Especially in wartime, is very common. Number seven, obsession with national security.
We will reinforce old alliances and form new ones and unite the civilized world against radical Islamic terrorism, which we will eradicate completely from the face of the earth.
Fear is used as a motivational tool by the government over the masses. Number eight, religion and government are intertwined.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Governments in fascist nations tend to use the most common religion in the nation as a tool to manipulate public opinion.
Just over a year and a month since candidate Trump called for, and I quote here, a complete and total shutdown of Muslims entering the United States, President Trump today signed an executive order aimed at fulfilling at least part of that goal, hewing closely to the rhetoric of banning entry to the United States based on country of origin and possibly even religion.
Religious rhetoric and terminology is common from government leaders, even when the major tenets of the religion are diametrically opposed to the government's policies or actions.
We come to you, Heavenly Father, in the name of Jesus.
Number 9, corporate power is protected.
We are going to be cutting taxes massively for both the middle class and for companies. When somebody wants to put up a factory, it's going to be expedited. We think we can cut regulations by 75%, maybe more, but by 75%.
The industrial and business aristocracy of a fascist nation often are the ones who put the government leaders into power, creating a mutually beneficial business/government relationship and power elite. Number 10, labor power is suppressed.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Taxes too high, wages too high. We're not going to be able to compete against the world. I hate to say it, but we have to leave it the way it is. People have to go out, they have to work really hard, and they have to get into that upper stratum. Our wages are too high. Everything's too high.
Take this job and shove it. I ain't working here no more.
Because the organizing power of labor is the only real threat to a fascist government, labor unions are either eliminated entirely or are severely suppressed.
Trump isn't just tweeting that unions aren't doing a good job. He actually, Leo, is putting his money where his mouth is. Today, he picked Andrew Puzder for labor secretary. That is the CEO of the company that owns Carl's Jr. and Hardee's. He is a vocal critic of minimum wage increases. On this issue, he said businesses create jobs, labor unions do not. To the contrary, labor unions often discourage businesses from creating jobs, particularly entry-level ones, by increasing the cost of labor without increasing its value. Is he the right pick for labor secretary?
No, absolutely not. He's completely wrong.
Number 11, disdain for intellectuals and the arts.
Something touched me deep inside the day the music died.
As President-elect Donald Trump prepares to take the oath of office, his transition team has reportedly been considering massive budget cuts to significantly reduce federal spending. According to a report published by The Hill on Thursday, the goal is to slash federal spending by $10.5 trillion over the next decade. It reports many departments, including energy and justice, would face cuts, but two agencies reportedly on the chopping block got quite a bit of attention. Those agencies are the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities. They fund arts and humanities programs across the country, including at museums and educational institutions. Not long after the report was published, the National Endowment for the Arts tweeted this nearly four-minute video about what it's done for American society.
Human beings not only define who they are, but who they want to be through the arts.
So would eliminating those two agencies make a dent? According to our math, the budgets of each agency accounted for less than 0.04% of federal spending in fiscal year 2016. But if the team did aim to cut $10.5 trillion in 10 years, or a little over $1 trillion per year, there wouldn't be much left. As a writer for The New Yorker pointed out, that would account for about all annual federal discretionary spending.
Fascist nations tend to promote and tolerate open hostility to higher education and academia.
I love the poorly educated.
It's not uncommon for professors and other academics to be censored or even arrested. Free expression in the arts and letters is openly attacked.
Well, President-elect up early on Twitter.
He sure is going to war with Hollywood's most celebrated
actress. She went on a Twitter firestorm here and starts, Meryl Streep, one of the most overrated actresses in Hollywood, doesn't know me, but attacked last night at the Golden Globes. She is a Hillary flunky who lost big. For the 100th time, I never mocked a disabled reporter, would never do that, but simply showed him groveling when he totally changed a 16-year-old story that he had written in order to make me look bad. Just more very dishonest media.
Number 12, obsession with crime and punishment. Under fascist regimes, the police are given almost limitless power to enforce laws.
We have to bring back law and order. Now, whether or not in a place like Chicago you do stop and frisk, which worked very well, Mayor Giuliani is here, but you take the gun away from criminals that shouldn't be having it.
Police and thieves in the street. Oh, yeah. Scaring the nation with their guns and ammunition.
The people are often willing to overlook police abuses and even forego civil liberties in the name of patriotism. There is often a national police force with virtually unlimited power in fascist nations.
The president tweeted, if Chicago doesn't fix the horrible carnage going on, 228 shootings in 2017 with 42 killings, up 24% from 2016, I will send in the feds.
Number 13. Rampant cronyism and corruption.
CBS News estimates 7 of Mr. Trump's picks are worth a combined $11.5 billion. Betsy DeVos, nominated for Secretary of Education, comes from a family worth more than $5 billion. Linda McMahon, picked for Small Business Administrator, has family wealth worth $1.2 billion. And Vincent Viola, Mr. Trump's choice for Army Secretary, is worth $1.77 billion.
I guess that I have a few poor millionaires on it, but mostly it's billionaires.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
Well, I'd buy you a house.
I would buy you a house.
And if I had $1 million.
Fascist regimes almost always are governed by groups of friends and associates who appoint each other to government positions and use governmental power and authority to protect their friends from accountability. It's not uncommon in fascist regimes for national resources and even treasures to be appropriated or even outright stolen by government leaders.
And you don't appoint the cabinet of billionaires to be taken on the establishment.
Steve Mnuchin, Mr. Trump's treasury pick, has been estimated to be worth as much as $655 million. He and Commerce Secretary nominee Wilbur Ross, worth $2.5 billion, recently said they were attuned to the plight of working Americans.
If I had $1 million. I'd be rich.
But not by Trump administration or cabinet standards. Number 14, fraudulent elections.
So why not definitively say that he will investigate if he believes in the administration's right. position is that there was massive voter fraud?
Well, first of all, the comment that he made was he said 3 to 5 million people, you know, could have voted illegally.
Sometimes elections in fascist nations are a complete sham. Other times, elections are manipulated by smear campaigns against or even assassination of opposition candidates.
Crooked Hillary, fuck. She's been crooked from the beginning, and to think that she has a shot at being our president, crooked Hillary Clinton. We can't let it happen. You can't let it happen.
Use of legislation to control voting numbers or political district boundaries and manipulation of the media.
So why not definitively say that he will investigate if he believes in the administration's right. position is that there was massive voter fraud?
Well, first of all, the comment that he made was he said 3 to 5 million people, you know, could have voted illegally.
Fascist nations also typically use their judiciaries to manipulate or control elections.
I'm sick and tired of hearing things from tight, short-sighted, narrow-minded hypocrites. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth. I've had enough of reading things by neurotic, psychotic, pig-headed politicians. All I want is the truth. Just give me some truth.
That's it, the 14 definitive characteristics of fascism. As written by Lawrence Britt, published in 2003, and given the What's News treatment. by me. I'm Nicole Sandler of NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network, telling you we are living in seriously dangerous times. It's up to us to resist every day. Fight fascism. Wow. And listening back to that now, some 7 months later, it is even more frightening, because each of those 14 characteristics we're seeing play out in real time. Just a little bit of perspective. All right, we're going to take a break. We've got Drift Glass coming up in a few minutes. If you don't know Drift Glass of Drift Glass's blog and the Professional Left podcast, well, you'll meet him in just a couple of minutes right here on The Nicole Sandler Show. We'll be right back.
I read the news today, oh boy.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Hurricane Harvey is expected to make landfall as the biggest storm to hit the mainland U.S. in 12 years as a Category 3 hurricane late Friday or early Saturday near Corpus Christi, Texas. Harvey is likely to pack winds of up to 125 miles per hour, with sea level surge as high as 12 feet, and it could dump up to 35 inches of rain over parts of Texas. Flood warnings are also in effect for northern Mexico and Louisiana. From CNN.
What we understand from local officials is they're preparing for a storm the likes of which we may have never seen before. Evacuations have been well underway here in Corpus Christi over the course of the last 48 hours. The local mayor here ordering voluntary evacuations, but a lot of people here, they didn't wait for the mayor to say something. They got out of town ahead of time. They're used to this type of weather. They've seen it before. Businesses are boarded up. Schools are closed. The last flight into and out of Corpus Christi Airport left earlier this morning at 6:30 local. Service has been shut down until over the weekend. Local officials here say that they have not officially designated any areas for shelter or relief, because they're really encouraging everyone to get out of town. This storm expected to be a big one.
Harvey will be the first major disaster of the Trump administration, and it comes at a time when there are vacancies at the helm of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, or NOAA. The Department of Homeland Security is also without a permanent leader after General John Kelly moved to be White House Chief of Staff. And the National Hurricane Center is also without a permanent director after its chief resigned in May. The president spent Friday morning tweeting, saying nothing about Texas. Harvey will make landfall just about 5 years to the date after Hurricane Andrew devastated South Florida. Sarah Huckabee Sanders took to the podium for the first on-camera briefing in over 3 weeks. She was grilled on a number of subjects, most notably the president's assertion Tuesday night.
Build that wall. Now, the obstructionist Democrats would like us not to do it, but believe me, if we have to close down our government, we're building that wall.
Sir, the president promised over and over again during the campaign that Mexico would pay for the wall. So why is he now threatening a government shutdown if Congress won't pay for it?
The president's committed to making sure this gets done. We know that the wall and other security measures at the border work. We've seen that take place the last decade, and we're committed to making sure the American people are protected. And we're going to continue to push forward and make sure that the wall gets built.
Why is he threatening a shutdown over paying for it? I mean, again, he said over and over again, he talked about the campaign over and over again, he said Mexico's going to pay for the wall. He asked people, his crowds chanted back, and Mexico's going to pay for it. And now he's pushing, threatening a shutdown of the government.
Now, once again, the president's committed to making sure this happens, and we're going to push forward.
Others tried to get a straight answer on why it's up to Congress to fund the wall and not Mexico.
Since the president is going full court press, threatening a shutdown over the funding of the wall, does that mean he is abandoning any efforts to negotiate with Mexico any payment for construction of the wall?
I certainly don't think any efforts have been abandoned.
On this threat of the government shutdown if Congress doesn't secure funding for this wall, how is that not a concession from this White House that Mexico isn't actually going to pay for this wall and American taxpayers will?
Again, this is something the president's committed to. He's committed to protecting American lives, and doing that through the border wall is something that's important. It's a priority, and we're moving forward with it.
But he's not saying that Mexico is going to pay for it.
He hasn't said they're not either.
He hasn't said they're not either? Sanders also sidestepped a question about a false story the president has been telling.
About a week ago, on August 17th, the president again referenced a fictitious story about General Pershing committing a mass execution in the Philippines. A couple questions on that. Does the president know that the story is false? And if so, why does he keep repeating it? And why does the White House think it's appropriate for the president to perpetuate this false story if he hasn't been informed that it's
not had a chance to ask him about that, so I can't speak to it.
Then on the broader point, so the president's spreading false information via his Twitter account that seems to encourage wartime atrocities. No one in the White House has thought to inform him that this
story is
false.
I didn't say no one had. I said I hadn't had that conversation, so I wasn't going to speak to something I wasn't aware of.
Saturday Night Live had one last summer weekend update for us Thursday night, just because we could all use a few laughs right about now.
People ask me, why are you doing a rally only 8 months in? Folks, it's never too early to campaign for 2020. Mike Pence is already doing it. I'm going to give you the hits, electoral map, drain the swamp, lock her up, all of them. But first, I want to talk about Charlottesville. As we all know, there was a tragic victim that came out of Charlottesville, me. Folks, the media has treated me so unfairly by reporting my entire remarks, even the bad ones. So I wanted to set the record straight about exactly what I said, and I have the transcript right here, okay? I moved on her like a bitch, but I couldn't get there. Now, sorry, that's a long question. You had a group on one side that is very bad, neo-Nazis, and you had a group on the other side, and then I didn't say a single word after that. I was stopped. Nothing else was said. Folks, we need to stick together as people, okay? I got
good. And that's a bit of What's News for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. The Nicole Sandler Show and What's News are 100% listener-funded, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com/donate. Quick reminder that I'm going to be taking a week off. I don't do it that often, but it's going to be a staycation. I'll be around. just need to unplug from all this for a little while for, you know, mental health, sanity's sake and all that. All right. Those of you who've listened to the show for a while will remember this.
Stealing the Mad Platters here on RadioNot.com. As we take a walk through the Golden Grooveyard, kicking off a silver dollar twin spin with the Drift Glass. When
this whole world stops, this sounds so familiar.
No, that's the Drifters. This is Drift Glass.
Oh, sorry. Here's Drift Glass with Nicole Sandler.
It does sound so familiar. Drift Glass.
It does.
Hello.
Hello, sweetie. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And you?
I'm doing fine. Fine, we're hanging in there. This crap can't stop us.
I hope not. You know, there are days that I think I don't know how much longer I can do this because it is so. It's just everywhere. There's just you feel like before at the beginning of the show, I was talking about being in the path of Hurricane Andrew. I happened to be here in Florida visiting my dad when Hurricane Andrew hit 25 years ago, and we were pretty much right in the path of it. And we had the hurricane shutters up, and it felt in the middle of the night, you could hear stuff hitting the house from all directions, like we were being bombarded. That's what it feels like with Trump. There's always something coming at us from every side, and it's impossible to keep up.
Well, that's the plan, right? I mean, just keep firing shit as fast as you possibly can, load up the tennis ball shooter, crank it to maximum, and just DACA and transgender ban, and we're going to get rid of the bike share at the White House, and bam, 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 bam. That's the plan. That's how fascists operate, is to keep everyone off balance and everyone confused and everyone sort of wandering around stunned. And that's why God invented liberals, to give people who are wandering the wilderness, looking for a vocabulary to explain what they're seeing, a framework to understand what it is that they're going through, because they don't understand. The people who have paid little or no attention to politics, or who have, you know, dawdled along with the both sides, it's really both sides, it's the extremes on both sides, have no framework to understand what they're going through. But you and I, who went through the Bush administration, know exactly what we're going through.
Yep.
This is reprise, granted upped, you know, 3 decibel levels or 3 orders of magnitude from that, but it's the same script. It's the same behavior. It's literally, in some cases, the same people. So it is, I'm not sure if it's a blessing or a curse, but I know what I'm looking at when I look out the window. I know where the hurricane came from. I know who caused it. I know why it's here. There's nothing I can physically do to stop it, but I can at least comprehend it with my mind and pass along what I know to anybody else who will listen.
You know, let me take a step backwards for those who don't know, because it's been over a year since you've been on the show. So Driftglass is a blogger who's been at it for longer than almost anyone else I know at driftglass.blogspot.com. And he's the co-host of the Professional Left podcast with his wonderful wife, Blue Gal, Fran, and writes and talks, and you make so much sense. And already you've calmed me down a bit. The reason I'm taking off next week is, seriously, I need a break from this because there's just too much.
Take it. No, this is the number one advice. I'm sure you get a ton of correspondence from people that you're helping and that you're talking to, you're interacting with. We do too. And that's a common theme. And our answer is, well, for God's sakes, sit down, take a break, put your feet up. Go outside, have a beer, have a glass of wine, take a week off. The war will be here when you get back. I promise you.
Yep.
You know, and when one of us has to sit down, three other people will step up and fill in the gap until they're ready to come back and join the fight. That's how we forget that we're a movement. I mean, sitting behind a microphone or sitting behind a keyboard, it's easy to forget that there are 60 some odd million people on my side.
Mm-hmm.
And growing every day, as far as I can tell. I mean, you know, granted, we've pretty much divided this country up into the unsalvageable morons in one party and the nice people sort of in a collection on the other side of that debate and a bunch of people who have no idea what's going on. But, you know, we won the popular vote during the last election.
We did.
I guarantee you, none of those people have changed their mind in the opposite direction since then.
No, and I think a lot of the people who didn't vote are now angry that they didn't vote. And I think a lot of the people who said, I'll show them, I'll vote for Trump, those are the ones who get me the most. I'm sure some of them are punching themselves as well.
Well, some of them are ABC's chief political analyst named Matthew Dowd, who has made a ritual of this is what's maddening about this, between you and me, and there's no one listening to this, right? We're not going to hurt anyone's feelings.
No.
Just you and me.
No, just
the maddening thing that at the center of the storm, the eye of this hurricane, is the way that both siderisms survives this. There's nothing that can kill it other than you and me and people like us taking down the center, really taking on the middle of the media, the people who the false equivalencers. But Matthew Dowd, who proudly voted against Hillary Clinton, who proudly says, I'm an independent, I didn't vote for either of these people, who now is saying things that you and I said last year, the year before that, who is catching up to where we were, but still doesn't want to let go of the fact that he was right and that everyone else is wrong. So the new thing, the new religion in the Beltway is don't judge anyone. Don't judge anyone. You know, Republicans should clean up their side of the aisle. Liberals should clean up their side. But we shouldn't be pointing fingers at each other. We shouldn't be judging each other. And, well, that's very convenient when you have decided that your part of the equation is you get to play referee.
Mm-hmm.
You get to decide who gets to judge other people, which is a very judgy thing to do. And it's those people that drive me batshit, because there is no reason on God's earth why Bill Kristol should have a job anywhere.
Right.
But he's currently a well-respected MSNBC contributor who talks about the Middle East, by the way, and ABC News employee, which is a weird combination to be. Charlie Sykes has a job for life.
Yep.
Rick Wilson has a job for life. Hugh Hewitt has a job for life.
But the first three you mentioned, Hugh Hewitt is off on his own, but the other three will sit there and condemn everything about Donald Trump. Well, they helped build this monster.
Absolutely. They sure. Well, and this is where being like anal about these sorts of things actually advantages me in imaginary arguments I have with reasonable conservatives, because the only reasonable conservatives I know are on reruns of The West Wing, which were invented by Aaron Sorkin. The rest of them are just, you know, unsalvageable trash people as far as I'm concerned. Pardon my being so judgy. But the point being that, what the hell was I going with this? Could you wind me back about 30 seconds?
Yeah, you were talking about the Matthew Dowds, the Bill Kristol has a job, Rick Wilson has a job. And
what I noticed a couple of Sundays ago, I mean, I don't watch the Sun. I used to document the Sunday shows religiously. I've been doing that for 12 years. Now I just sort of catch them up on YouTube, on Crooks and Liars and so forth, because it's just the same. It's just reruns. Every week it's the same deck of tired cards reshuffled in a different way. But a couple of weeks ago, since they can really no longer, ever since Donald Trump said, many sides, it's all on many sides.
Yes.
The whole both sides argument explicitly, making that explicit argument has gotten polluted. Because now they're like, they look like Nazi sympathizers when they say it, which is frankly what they are. So now Chuck Todd is leading the charge on saying, essentially, the Republican Party was fine before 2015. Everything was fine. Everything was great. Everything was fine. It's this after 2015 thing. And what he's doing is he's granting redemption to anybody who wants to say, Donald Trump's the problem. Donald Trump's a monster. Donald Trump is a betrayer of conservatism. Donald Trump's not a real Republican. And that's what they're all doing. From Joe Scarborough all the way down the line, the people who are never Trumpers are all on board saying everything was fucking brilliant before 2015. And then Donald Trump came along, who was a Democrat, you know. He's a Democrat. You know, he's a Democrat. And he took over this party. And ever since then, everything's gone to hell. But that is just another way of saying, please, please, for God's sakes, don't look at what we've been doing inside the Republican Party since the 60s.
Right.
Because if you ever do that, if you ever honestly draw a timeline, if you ever draw a cause and effect chart of how the hell we got here, all y'all would be in prison. All y'all would be unemployed. And they're not going to let that happen until they're forced to let it happen. So Chuck Todd has declared everything before 2015 was fine. Everything after 2015, for some weird reason, just went cockamamie haywire. And the only way we're going to get to the truth is just by interviewing an infinite number of Trump voters over and over and over and over again. I haven't been interviewed. Don't know if you have.
No, I haven't been.
The New York Times. I live in the middle of the Midwest, right?
Yes.
I live smack in the middle of, I live in Lincoln's hometown.
You're out
I
there.
Wait for the New York Times van to pull up in front of my door every day and ask me what I think of something. I'm a white guy. I live in Midwest. I vote. Mm-hmm. Why don't you care what I'm waiting for all the articles about why won't Trump reach out to Democratic voters? Remember when Barack Obama was a failure because he refused to reach out to Republicans, which was a lie because he did every day?
Right.
Where's all the articles by those people about why won't Trump reach out to Democrats? And that's where I just throw up my hands at some point and say, all right, I'm not going to get frustrated, but I'm going to acknowledge the fact that the Trump voters and Donald Trump are right about one thing, you know, in a very wrong way. But they're right about one thing. The media is completely broken.
It
top
is,
to bottom, side to side.
Right. And I agree. And but I think you talk about the New York Times. I thank God for the New York Times and the Washington Post these days, although not every writer at both papers, obviously.
That's the thing, isn't it? They do heroic work. Mm-hmm. And then you remind them, yeah, you guys are doing a great job. I could listen to Connie Schultz, for example, talk all day long.
She's great.
She's great, and she's clear-spoken. She writes like I like my writers, clear, on point, articulate, and wise, and humane. But then it's like, remember back when you were running headlines day after day after day after day about emails? Remember when you did a deal for Clinton cash with the worst people in the world?
Yeah.
Remember that little handshake deal you had with Breitbart? Like, no, we'd rather not talk about that. Let's talk about what a bad campaign she ran.
Right.
Let's talk about anything else under the sun but how we enabled this monster. And that's the danger of the way journalism is conducted. Because if I work for an insurance company or a bank or a gas station and I have a crazy shitty opinion, and well, that's fine. That's just me having a bad opinion in my business. But if your business is pointing a spotlight at powerful people who have screwed this country up, what happens when the powerful person who has screwed the country up is your boss? What happens when it's Andy Lack at NBC?
Yep.
What happens when it's Jeff Zucker at CNN? And you'll notice that even the best people in those organizations will not talk about their own complicity in what happened. They will never talk about their colleagues. Rachel Maddow will beat up on Paul Wolfowitz all day long, but she won't say a mother effing word about Bill Kristol,
right?
Who's just as bad.
No,
because he's
my
colleague.
Friend. Oh, and a Republican is coming on my show, and I'm so excited.
my close, dear, personal friend,
yes.
Brenda Van Susteren.
Right.
You'll all like, right? Because she's great, right?
Oh, right. She's right. Wonderful.
Oh,
yes.
Now she's gone. Well, guess what? We'll get Peggy Noonan. She'll come on.
Oh, my God. And they did.
They did.
They did.
So I have great hope for the future. But it really requires us to all, who was it? Melissa Harris Perry has a good term for it. You probably heard it. Squad support.
Okay.
I think that's right. It's leaning into your group.
Right.
Being alone is not enough. You cannot do this on your own. You can't stand it on your own. You go nuts if you do it on your own. You have to be able to lean back into other people and let them carry the burden for a while and understand you're part of a big movement. And so, again, being behind a microphone or being behind a keyboard is a really lonely place to be. So you get out and you talk to people and you shake hands with them and you go to rallies and you sit with them. And we had lunch, Blue Gal and I, last week with some listeners. And it just lightened our burden immensely. Just to sit and chat with people who are like us from a different city who are crazy in the way we're crazy.
Well, that
makes me feel
nice.
Good.
Yes. You know, you're talking about the way they're complicit in it. Like CNN, for instance, who are now, you know, Trump's number one arch enemy. But CNN, if not for CNN carrying his rallies as a candidate from start to finish each day, he might not be there.
Oh, yeah. Well, MSNBC, I was writing, you know, in the middle of the campaign. This is how liberal TV dies. Mm-hmm. It was sitting with a camera pointed at an empty podium.
The empty podium.
With a big Trump banner behind day after day, waiting for Donald Trump to show up. When is he going to show up? What's he going to do? And really, there's nothing, literally nothing else on the planet Earth to talk about during this 5 or 10 or 15 minute period while you're waiting. While you're just waiting. Oh, you're just giving him free air, literally
yes.
An empty podium airtime.
Yep.
And there's not. And you know, and I know that they got a directive from someone in a suit on up in the executive suite saying, this is how you're going to goddamn well cover this.
Right, because he's good for ratings. Because, again, it's all about ratings. Now, look, 60 Minutes and the news never used to be part of the profit center. The news was a loss leader. The news was something they had to do. It was a public service. It was part of the broadcast station getting and keeping its license, their commitment to public service and news and information. They didn't sell advertising. They weren't allowed to sell advertising. Then one day they realized, ooh, people are watching this stuff. We can make money off it. And that's when it all that's when it all really started going to shit.
Yeah. And that was when Reagan off the fairness doctrine.
Yep.
You know what? It was like, what, 10 months later that Rush Limbaugh was syndicated across the country.
Yeah.
I mean, it really was. And Rush Limbaugh, and I wrote a long ass post about this a couple of months ago, literally said that he was the first person to break free of the prison of the fairness doctrine. But, you know, I feel obliged to sort of carry around in my back pocket, metaphorically, the timeline of how we got here.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it doesn't do any good, say, here's Reagan getting rid of the Fairness Doctrine. Here's the rise of Rush Limbaugh. Here's the rise of Newt Gingrich. That was a quarter of a century ago.
Yep. Hurricane Andrew.
Who has disavowed, has the Republican Party disavowed Newt Gingrich? Have
no.
They disavowed Rush Limbaugh?
No.
Are they not allowed on television? Oh, no. They're still respected people. So, well, maybe that's the problem. Maybe the fact that people who decided on purpose to create a hate machine to demonize people like us so that they could get the rubes to vote against their own interests to give rich people tax cuts, maybe that vast machine is the problem. And maybe it's not worth selling a few more dick pills and reverse mortgages on your goddamn television show. Maybe it's worth it to give up that for a little while to point the camera at those people and say once and for all in a very clear Walter Cronkite kind of voice, the problem with this country is the Republican Party, period, full stop. And after that problem is gone, we can fight about debt limits and we can fight about single payer. And we can fight about a whole bunch of things I'd love to fight about like a grown up.
Right.
But until the Republican Party is on the ash heap of history, until the center quits propping it up, we're never going to be rid of this stupid, enveloping, mind-numbing, dumbass argument.
Driftglass is with us. So okay, you mentioned Connie Schultz, because I want to know who out there, who else do you think is doing good work? We know there's a plethora of them doing bad work. There are some that, I'm almost embarrassed to admit it, and I never read Jennifer Rubin before she saw the light on, you know, who Donald Trump is and how, what he's doing to the country. She writes the Right Turn blog at the Washington Post.
Does.
Lately, I can't get enough of her because she's spot on. She realizes how awful he is. Now, I'd probably be horrified if I went back and read her stuff from 2 or 3 or 4 years ago.
You would be.
I'm sure. But right now, I'm so appreciative of her because she's talking to, I mean, her people, the people who read her back then, they're probably reading her now, and maybe she's getting through to some of them. Who do you think is doing good work?
There's a magic phrase that if it shows up in your text, I will forgive a lot. And the magic phrase is, the left was right about the right all along.
Uh-huh.
If you you know, are wailing and gnashing your teeth and rending your garments and saying, oh, Trump's a disaster. Oh, my God, the Republican Party's a shithole. Oh, my God. And you don't follow up with, and there were these people who were warning us about this for the last 30 years, and we shit all over them and refused to listen to them and shoved them to the corner, and they told us this was going to happen during the Bush administration. They told us during the Clinton administration. They were yelling about it during the Obama administration. Now the beast has arrived.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not going to tell the whole truth, then you're just Charlie Sykes, who just changed. He's just a windsock.
Right.
Oh, the wind's blowing from the left now. I'll do that now.
Right.
And my friends at the network will give me a job. I can go straight from being a hate radio jock to being a respected contributor at MSNBC. People are doing a good job. I like Charlie Pierce.
Oh, I love Charlie Pierce. Yeah.
Big fan of Charlie Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
I like Charles Blow because mm-hmm. he pisses people off. I would rather he not go on CNN, but I guess he has to feed his family. Long form. It's really hard to think of who's doing good stuff in long form. I still read bloggers, man. I still read Digby.
Well, who you know? Doesn't? I'd love Digby. Digby has always been there. Do you watch television?
I scan it because, as you know, the lovely and talented Blue Gal is my wife. She's also an editor at Crooks and Liars.
Yes.
So the people who are on television that give me hope are like Joy Reid on Saturday morning and mm-hmm. Sunday morning. I can Rachel Maddow, when she's on her game, is can't be beat, can't be touched, except, again, these big blind spots they have.
Yes.
There are a few others. There's a handful of others. But I admit to a level of confirmation bias because I want people to tell me the whole story.
Yes.
I want to hear the whole story all the way through. I don't want to hear, we don't have time for that, or we're completely, you know, off the map. That's really it. I mean, I'm sure there's others that aren't coming to mind right now. I knew there'd be a quiz, I was but there are people for example, Eric Alterman, for example, has a wonderful article today or yesterday on Bill Moyer's blog.
Okay.
The Bill Moyer site, about this Harvard study that shows exactly how well-ordered and well-organized the conservative media is and how they have really dominated the conversation forever and how they have really cut the legs out from under Washington Post and the New York Times by forcing them or making them feel like they were obligated to honor both sides of a conversation when one side is clearly lying and the other is clearly not. So I like long form stuff like that.
Right. Right. See, my problem with the TV, and I do, I watch a lot of TV because I need to stay on top of what's happening. But when they get into I'm going to have one person from the left and one person from the right, or even worse, three from the left and three from the right, and let them battle it out and scream over one another, it's noise. I tune out too. When they're giving information, if they're giving news, that's what we really need, is an actual news channel, which we do not have.
Yeah. No, there are aspects that I like the way Lawrence O'Donnell constructs a story, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But then he'll have Tom Friedman on, and I have to turn him off.
Right.
I don't want to ever see Tom Friedman again. I don't want to see his face. I don't want to know what he does. It's like Fredo. I don't want to know you or what you do.
Right.
I don't want to have anything to do with you. So there are people who I actively avoid or people mm-hmm. who I'll mute. And that probably blocks out a lot of conversations going, because I know it's like seeing the same horrible movie for the millionth time. I know how this is going to end. I know how this conversation is going to end. I don't care. So I really do filter for new stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or honestly, I filter since I'm a blogger and I write every day, and since I'm a podcaster and since I stay abreast of things, I try to look for the areas of the areas of fascinating conflict. When Joe and Mika are under such torsional strength or stress that they have to start admitting that maybe the Republican Party is completely fucked in the head and awful. Watching them sort of bend, and then Joe Scarborough say, "But now I'm an independent.
Right.
I'm an independent."
Right.
And it was like, "Of course you are. Of course, here's a gold star for you. Of course, because now you're an independent. Because now I know what's going to happen next. It's going to, we're going to play the Tea Party game all over again. All the assholes who supported the Bush, who cheered for Bush, who thought Bush was the greatest thing in the world and dropped a house on the Dixie Chicks when they said mean words about Bush.
Oh, yeah.
And it all blew up in their face.
Yep.
Did they accept responsibility for what they did? Of course not. They're Republicans. Republicans don't do that. They put on funny hats and they wave funny flags and they call themselves independents. And we're a Tea Party. And the media said, you're right. You're brand new people. You're not accountable for anything. That's what's going to happen in much shorter order. Also, one exception. When I hear what's going on in the Mueller investigation,
yes.
I tune in.
You think that's
going
to? You think that'll take them down?
I have no idea, but I'm like the one outfit that doesn't leak at all is them, and that means, and he's lined up a whole bunch of lawyers who know a whole bunch of shit about RICO and foreign money and bribery, international bribery, and if his mandate is broad enough to dig into the Trump family dynasty for the last 20 years, taxes and all, shitty business deals and all, Russian mafia and all, and all their weird-ass ties to Manafort and so on, that'll be the biggest political story of my life, if it goes there.
Yes.
If it doesn't, then it doesn't. But
right.
The fact that you're not saying a damn word,
yeah,
I respect that.
And to the people who say, well, we haven't found anything out yet. Yeah, because they're not talking yet. There's right. All kinds of stuff they know that we don't know. So wait until the investigation's over and we'll find out. Drift Glass, this half hour flew by. It had been too long. It's been over a year. So thank you so much for coming back. And I hope you'll come back on again, because it's always a great conversation with you.
My pleasure. I love chatting with you. And hello, everybody out there. I really appreciate it. And visit. Oh, we have a new website, and I'll tell you all about that some other time.
Okay. Thank you so much. In the meantime, go to professionalleft.blogspot.com and driftglass.blogspot.com. Thank you again.
Pleasure.
Bye. Bye. All right. We are done. I've run over. I think Progressive Voices is already gone. I am off next week. I will be back a week from Tuesday, the day after Labor Day. Thank you for bearing with me these last few months. I'm going to take some mental health time and talk to you in a week.